Welcome to Real Estate Money School, where up-and-coming investors go to tackle their biggest challenge. Where's the money? Hosted by Chris Noggle, pro snowboarder turned real estate investor, speaker, and trainer, and host of HGTV's Risky Buildings. Remember, investing isn't about resources, it's about being resourceful. Ready to master money in real estate? Then it's time to become a rebel banker. It's time for Real Estate Money School.
Hey, Rebel Bankers, this is your host, Chris Noggle, and welcome back to the Real Estate Money School. I'm joined here with Neil Bawa, and here's I'm going to read a little thing. He gave me this, and I think it's fantastic. He is known as the mad scientist of multifamily. If that doesn't get you guys excited, like, I don't know what else does. He's got so many things we could talk about in his background. You know, one of the most in-demand speakers in the commercial real estate space. Neil's a data guru, and believe me, when you hear about what he's doing with data, you're gonna literally just be like, oh yeah, he's the guru. Process freak and an outsourcing expert. So think about that, right? He's not only the mad scientist in the multifamily world, but he's also known as the guru in this space of data. Data is important because there's a lot you can do with that. Process freak and an outsourcing expert. This is somebody you all need to learn from. So we're going to dive into what he does and what he does in his companies, Grow Capitus and Multifamily U. But we're really going to talk a lot today about the markets. Right now, when you're watching this or whenever you're watching this, we are in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic, epidemic, recession, depression, whatever you want to call it. That's where we're at right now. So there is just so much for us to talk about. Neil and I met on another webinar we were doing, and it was kind of fun. I heard Neil talk. I'm like, this gentleman knows what he's talking about. Neil heard me talk, and I think he thought the same thing. And we were just like, money's our space, and that's kind of how this happened. So this is going to be a great podcast, folks. So before we get into Neil's story and kind of what we're going to get into with today's economy and today's markets, let me just talk a little bit about you. And your journey to becoming a rebel banker, there are a couple things you need to do. Number one, you're here. That's step number one. You're taking action, and you're seeking knowledge in the space of what you want to do. But the most important thing is not just getting knowledge and seeking knowledge, it's applying knowledge. You actually have to take that leap. You actually have to go out there and apply this knowledge in your space, in your business, and in your journey, because if you don't apply knowledge, you're not going to get anywhere. Application can start anywhere. It can start with grabbing a copy of my book, Mapping Out the Millionaire Mystery. Or if you're seeking money for your real estate deals, a lot of what Neil and I are going to talk about, you can grab a copy of this book, The Private Money Guide. Both of them are free. You just pay the shipping. So to get a copy of these books for free, you just go to moneyschoolrei.com/book. And that's The Private Money Guide, or the same thing, moneyschoolrei.com/new book. And that will get you Mapping Out the Millionaire Mystery. So get on that journey to becoming a rebel banker. But let's dive in. Neil, thanks again for joining me today.
Thanks for having me on the show, Chris. This is going to be a hoot. I'm really looking forward to this.
I was too. And when I saw it last week on the calendar, I'm like, yes, we get to go round two on this. This is going to be so much fun. So where should we start? I mean, well, first, actually, Neil, just because there's a lot of people that are going to join us that didn't see the first one, so they don't know your background. Can you just do a real quick explanation of your background and kind of what your business does today?
Absolutely. I am a geek. I'm a technologist, data scientist, and a geek, tech geek by profession. I'm here in Silicon Valley. And I'm doing what I've done all of my life. I experiment relentlessly. I break things. And somewhere along the way, it seems to create money for myself and for my investors. So at the moment, that happens to be multifamily. I don't know if that's going to be the case 5 years or 10 years from now. But right now, I'm having fun with buying large apartment complexes, about 500 active investors that are investing with me today. The portfolio is about $270 million. It's in 9 states, and half of it is new construction projects, and the other half are value-add multifamily. There's some student housing and some public storage that's sprinkled in there because I like those asset classes, and my investors want the diversification. But for the most part, it's multifamily, and just enjoying an endless series of experiments there. So I definitely, at some point, want to mention my latest experiment and how that worked out, and maybe kind of, you know, give you a feel for what I mean when I mean relentless experimentation.
Relentless experimentation. So, you know, there was one thing that I remember when we did the last one we talked about, and it was about you did something with data. You figured something out almost by accident. And what you figured out turned out to be one of you, I don't know if it's your greatest, you know, thing, but when you told me that, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe somebody else isn't doing this. I couldn't believe I hadn't thought of that. But can you just give us a quick background of what that one data find was and how you were locating properties in a way that nobody else had really thought to do?
Absolutely. Well, in technology, we're always looking for how-to guides, right? So we're always looking for the next Wikipedia, the next Google. And so when I started getting interested in real estate, and this is more than a decade ago, I was looking for, okay, there must be some kind of methodology that people follow to figure out the best properties in the United States, right? What is that magic algorithm, right? What is that E equals MC squared? It has to exist. And when I started looking for it, I found, well, either you're going to pay $25,000 a month and get a subscription to something like CoStar, or you're on your own. There was really nothing in between. There were a bunch of people selling what seemed to me like snake oil. It was just, you know, stuff that they had thought up, and they thought it was great because they thought it up. But there was nothing that was actually data-driven, analytics-driven. There was nothing that statistical analysis had been done on. That really surprised me because real estate is one of the largest industries in the world. And you can, you know, when you are playing the stock market, you can get software like Robinhood where they're tweaking their algorithm every single day to try and improve it. There's lots of things that you can get, right? But for real estate, it wasn't there. So what I did was basically I grabbed from a website named Zillow information about 3,300 cities in the United States. And I used a Ukrainian hacker to do that and paid him, and he basically spidered the entire website and gave it to me. And I was terrified that the FBI would come arrest me, but nothing happened, right? So he gave this information to me. And then what I did was I took that information, which told me where home prices were going up and how fast they were going up and how much money were people making, how much were they making in rental. So he gave me that information. And then I did, and I cross-referenced it against a whole bunch of demographics, which I thought might have something to do with why prices were going up so fast and why real estate investors are making so much money. And I threw dozens and dozens of demographic statistics at it. So home price increase, population growth, rent growth. I threw in poverty levels. I threw in, crime and crime reduction. I threw in schools. So as I threw in lots and lots of statistics at it, using a statistical analysis software called R, a pattern began to emerge. And what was interesting was you'd think that schools were one of the biggest things, you know, that predicted success for real estate investors. It actually turned out it wasn't. What was more important was crime. What was more important was income growth. What was more important was job growth. So when those numbers were added into the mix, I could see that the cities that the job growth and income growth was very strong and crime was coming down. There was an acceleration of real estate profits. People were making more profits consistently, where everyone was just saying, it's me, I knew what I was doing, and you know, I'm awesome, I'm a great real estate investor. What was really happening was 99% of your success was actually being driven by these huge gorillas in the background that were either pushing you up or pushing you down. And so I ended up running that on pretty much the whole US, took about a year and a half to refine it. And I created a system called Real Focuses, and then I published it on the web for free. And that last part, people tell me every day, was just crazy. It's like, so you spent a year doing this, you came up with a system that tells you exactly what city in the US and what neighborhood in the US to go to, and then you gave it away for free. And I'm like, yes. And they're like, so why would you do that? And I said, because it allowed me to make a great deal of money, because it branded me with investors. So imagine the mad scientist, he's out there, my reach is tiny, and I published this thing for free on a website called Udemy, U-D-E-M-Y. And this website has 50 to 100 million visitors a month, right? And I published this course there, and all of a sudden 10,000 people are taking this course. And people are like leaving comments, they're going gaga over it, their mind is just exploding that somebody basically gave this away for free. And so it actually became my biggest win. Because to me, the concept of charging for it never really entered into my mind. It was like, this is phenomenal. I need to get it out there. And now every day, somebody takes that course on Udemy and they're like, I love what you're doing. I see exactly how you do it because you gave me a system-wide process, but I don't have the time to do it for 3,300 cities. Could I just invest with you? And so we ended up with more than 3,500 accredited investors, rich people, in our database. And every day there's more of these geeks that come up. So, you know, I'm a geek that's attracting other geeks. And so that one thing made a huge change to my life.
Well, you know, the best part about that, and that's, you know, I heard that story before, but everybody listening, I'm sure what you understood and what you followed there, you found this unique pattern. We're going to talk a lot about patterns on today's show. But the other thing you heard him say, and just like everybody else said he was crazy, he gave it away for free. Okay, he put it on Udemy and he gave it away for free. But you know what? It makes all the sense in the world why that worked. If you really think about the universe and you think about why certain things happen, and I've read books upon books about this, and one of my mentors told me, all you need to do to get success is just give your best stuff away for free. Well, that's what you did. You gave your best stuff away for free. And because of that, you attracted more people than you probably ever could have attracted. And then as they came, they just were seeking out what you had created, but then they realized, yeah, this is great, but I really don't want to do that. Can I just jump on with you? And now you have built an entire empire off of this, an empire of geeks, as you call it, but it's been very profitable, and profitable not just for you, but for so many other people. And like, there's a lot to learn about that. You know, Zig Ziglar said, if you help enough people get what they want, you'll get what you want. That's what you did. So there's no secret as to why that worked. It was genius. You just did it because you just felt like people needed this. And given that, there's so much that I could say about that, but I really don't want to go too deep down that rabbit hole because I want to talk about what's happening today. You know, and the patterns, one thing that I did, and, you know, Neil, I know we spoke about this a lot. You know, I spent a lot of my life, 16 years of my life on Wall Street, you know, doing investment management, managing people's money, managing institutions' money. And one of the things at the tail end of my career, I got to really fine tune is patterns of the markets. So once I learned this and I saw these very rhythmic, very predictable patterns in the markets, I started to ask myself, well, how come everybody doesn't know this? Like, can't, you know, everybody should just be able to understand that the market works in a 7 to 10 year pattern. So we're 11 years in, the market's going to fall. I don't know if it's going to be a virus, a pandemic, a world war, a political play, but it's 11 years in and we got an election. So that pattern was so easy to see. Now, you can't predict the market. You can't predict and time the market, but you certainly could see these patterns. And then when you get down into the stock market, you can see very rhythmic patterns inside of each individual stock, index, ETF, whatever you're trading. They all trade within rhythmic patterns. So right now, here we are. We just had coronavirus hit us hard in February. The whole country shut down. The market tanked in March. It didn't really tank, actually. It just had a big pullback. A lot of people think, oh my God, it tanked. No, that's not a tank. That was just a pullback down to 19,000 on the Dow, and then it creeped back up. And then now, a lot of people think, because they watch the news too much, they think the markets just keep going up. The markets haven't really gone up since the end of May. And they're probably not going up much at all because what they're doing is they're going completely sideways. And this sideways pattern is the most predictable thing I think I've ever seen. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen because it's just algorithms running mathematical equations every single day. And it's tightening up that pattern and then it's widening it out. But people only see the green or the red. So how do we take these patterns? You found patterns in data. I find patterns in the markets. And now I'm trying to figure out what's the next play. Because if all we can control is what's happening now, but we still need to get a read on what the next play is. You know, what are you anticipating is going to happen in the economy, in the markets, and specifically in real estate, single family, you know, multifamily, and large commercial projects? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, what you just said is so fascinating. You know, the first thing that occurs to me to say, Chris, is this. The last 3 months have been so insanely bizarre that there is this completely understandable tendency to say, you know, yeah, these 3 months are kind of sort of like the 3 months before there's a pandemic, but otherwise it's like the 3 or 4 months before. It's not. The last 4 months have been the most unique 4 months in the history of the world that I can ever remember, okay? And I include the 1929 depression in that, and it doesn't even come close to what we've seen in the last 120 days. At no point ever in modern history has the entire world shut down. At no point in modern history have every single economy in the world been in a recession at the same time. Never happened. 1929 was not even close. There were over 100 countries that were doing really, really well during that time. What we are seeing today is beyond bizarre. And that's why our brain, the first pattern is that our brain refuses to adjust to living in a place where amazing stuff, good and bad, is happening every single day. So we are living in truly extraordinary times. That's the first pattern that I see. The second pattern, which has been visible for a while, and I know this is visible to you, Chris, but it's now more visible to people, is this. The stock market no longer represents Main Street. It does not represent America at all. What has happened is over the last 15 years, and read about this. I urge you, you have to understand and read about this. The wealth in the stock market has become concentrated, very highly concentrated, in less than 5% of people that live in America. So the vast majority of what's in the stock market, the total number of dollars, are concentrated now amongst 5% of Americans, right? And there's other people, yeah, you know, I've got 10,000 or 50,000, yes, but you don't compare to the guy that has, you know, 500 million. So look at it from that perspective and say, is the vast majority of the wealth belonging to Americans? No, it's belonging to a very small subset of Americans. And the biggest benefit that you can give that 5% is ever lower interest rates, is basically destruction of currency and interest rates that are going as close to zero as you can. And in the U.S., they haven't gone negative yet. But hey, we're early days, right? I'm absolutely predicting negative interest rates in the U.S., within months, if not weeks. I mean, we're going to see what happens when in July we take off this unemployment feed that we put everybody on. So the key is that if you are looking at the Dow Jones every day and trying to understand what is going on in your country, you're looking in the wrong place. In fact, you're looking in the worst imaginable place. Because what you're doing is you're looking at what's going on with the top 5% of this country. Because not only do they is the vast majority of the stock market belonging to those 5%, that 5% have twisted the system to the point where what happens in the stock market is actually based on what's good for them, not good for the rest of us. So things have gotten perverted to that point. We're looking at the stock market and saying, why doesn't this match the real economy? Why doesn't this match real estate? Why doesn't this match what everything else is happening? Is no longer something that should be a question in your mind, simply because the stock market has nothing to do with the real economy. And that's what we're seeing. I mean, it's absolutely bizarre.
It is. And you know, the biggest thing I say a lot, and I speak on multiple podcasts and webinars and all as much as I can, I try to tell the story. What you're witnessing right now is one of the – so you might – let's go back to 2008. You know, 2008 is when people think the recession started. The recession started in 2007. It happened in 2007. We just didn't see it because of manipulation, and then it really came to light in 2008. So it would almost be likely, if you really dug into that, to figure out, did it actually start in 2007 or did it start in 2006. So the whole thing that's happening right now, if you just look at the past to try to figure this out, which is very difficult because this is unlike anything else. But one thing you can certainly tell is what is happening right now. I love what you said about the 5% representing the stock market. You're absolutely correct. I know people that trade the dark pools, which is where hedge funds do their block trades and lots of other stuff. And just to kind of put this in perspective, hedge funds are trading at half the volume they normally do. Why would hedge funds hedge funds have the ability to move the market. So you and I do not, unless in large sums of masses. But hedge funds can. Hedge funds are only trading at half their value or half the volume that they normally do. Do you think they know what's going on? Of course they do. They're run by the top 5%. So what you're actually witnessing happen right now with the markets where they appear to be going up is one of the largest and biggest illusions you've ever seen. Picture the biggest magic show you could ever go to in your entire life. That is what you're witnessing. Literally, this isn't just a rabbit being pulled out of a hat. You're seeing things that are happening that should never happen, but they are, and they will continue. And not only that, you got an election with the craziest two sides here. Like, not, and I don't even know what to expect. But all I can tell you is the one thing you should be planning for, and everyone watching this, is you should not fall into this trap. You need to be ready for what will come, because it will come, and I don't know when the 5% decide they want it to happen is when it's going to happen. This whole thing will crash and burn. And the wealthy will get even wealthier because they understand how to play that game. The average person does not. Main Street doesn't even understand what's happening. Main Street, like you said, fails to want to even realize what's going on. They just want to go about their lives almost like the Matrix, right? You remember the movie The Matrix? Like,
oh,
you had
absolutely.
Those two pills, and there was just all the people living like your just fantasy world, but it wasn't even real. It was a computer, almost a computer program running their lives. And then, you know, he took that pill and he saw what was real. Well, unfortunately, when you peel the onion a couple of times, you see what's real, and it's a scary, scary thing. But we can be scared, we can talk about the negatives, or we can just kind of try to figure it out. Like, how do you play this to have – because this is going to create the one of the biggest opportunities, I think, in my lifetime. You know,
it's
some of you are younger. I think this will be
ever.
The largest opportunity of my life, because I'll be gone well before the next opportunity ever happens like this. But if this is that big of an opportunity, how do you play this opportunity? How do you prepare for this opportunity? What are the things we should be anticipating and getting ready for? And that still is something I have not figured out. Now, number one, I fully understand that cash is king and we need to be liquid and ready to take action on this. But how do you take action with cash when the government just prints money and decreases the value of your dollars at the rate of $2 trillion, $3 trillion, $4 trillion, and that $4 trillion or whatever dollars that they're printing. We don't even know how much they printed at this point. We know of the $2 trillion. If they print $2 trillion, your dollar just became worth lots less, because that $2 trillion needed to derive value from somewhere. It didn't just happen, so it steals value from your current dollars. It's called inflation. We haven't even seen that really happen, but we will, and you're going to see it in a big way. So what do we do? Like, where is the opportunity in real estate? Where is it going to be? I think a lot of people, you know, Neil, here's something, and I don't mean to keep going on a tangent with this, but
sure.
One of the things I'm seeing, and it's I'm trying to help people feel right now like they're missing out on an opportunity. They think that the opportunity has come and gone because in March, they're like, oh my God, I should have been ready. I should have bought. I didn't. I'm missing this opportunity. I got to get back in this, or I'm going to miss it. And I'm hearing that with real estate. I did a call today, and it was a young guy, and he's like, yeah, you know, I want to start buying real estate. I'm trying to get everything ready. I'm like, what's the rush? Well, I feel like I'm missing an opportunity. You believe me, if you get into that right now, you're probably in you missed the opportunity because you're already at the top. So what do we do? What would be your opinion, you know, on how we play this thing?
If you want to learn how to play this game, you have to learn how to think like rich people. So one of the things that we've seen is that since we started seeing mass manipulation of by the Federal Reserve System into monetary and fiscal policy, is that every recession that happens, the rich come out a lot richer. Why? Because the system is being used to protect them during recessions, to protect their assets, to protect their businesses, and so they come out richer. So if you want to understand how you're going to make money, because it's not that hard to make money, you simply have to follow what benefits the rich. And if you understand that, you have a really, really good foundation, right? If you're reading the books that tell you about how the rich are being protected today, you align yourself with them. You align because it's from what I'm seeing is that political will is very easy to buy today. Political capital, political will, votes are easy to buy. Mm-hmm. And the people that are in charge are the lobbies of different kinds. Democrats have, you know, the nursing lobby, and they've got the truckers lobby. They've got all of the unions. And then the Republicans, they've got the business lobbies. Either way, what is happening in America is that political will has almost frittered away to nothing. I mean, there's no real political will. The only thing that's there is this strong protection of the rich, protection of the lobbies. And if you align yourself to that, you'll see a path going forward. There's a lot of fog right now, but as that fog clears, one thing I can tell you is that those people will be protected. Their assets are going to be protected. And where are their assets? Well, their assets are in the stock market, their assets are in real estate, and ways will be found over the next you know, 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 24 months, however long this mess takes, ways will be found to protect their assets. And you can immediately also guarantee the reverse of that, that ways will be found so that things that Main Street needs, the things that you need, a low level of inflation, will not be protected. You know, Social Security will not be protected. Pensions will not be protected. Anything that basically was something that millions of people need rather than the small number of, you know, the rich will not be protected, because whenever bad things happen, money has to come from somewhere and it has to go towards somewhere. And it is going to come from Main Street. It's going to come from, you know, these kinds of pension funds and Social Securities and all of the other, you know, money that was being spent on Main Street, and it is going to flow towards Wall Street. We saw that last time. We saw that in 2008, 2009, 2010, and we're gonna see an acceleration of it. We're not going to see as much as we saw last time. We're going to see 2x, 3x, or 10x, that number, because what's happening is that the elites are beginning to understand how to take the U.S. into recession. They didn't do that at this point, obviously. Coronavirus did. But when that recession happens, they realize, there's a lot of political will for interesting things to happen here. Right now, the economy is doing really badly. People are screaming. They need something done. Let's manipulate the system and benefit from it. So you will see a higher level of manipulation, because it's so much easier to manipulate the economy in the name of protecting Main Street. And so you're going to see a series of manipulations happen there. And you're already seeing some of those manipulations happen and boost up the stock market, right? You've seen interest rates cut to zero. The rest of the world has gone negative. And that is a theft. When interest rates drop to zero, 7 billion people get poorer, right? And most people don't realize that. And because nobody realizes that, it's the greatest theft in history. You can simultaneously steal money from 7 billion people and deposit it into the bank accounts of those that have assets that are cash flowing, like real estate, right? There's other assets that cash flow as well. But you're literally taking money out from everybody and depositing it, because those assets are not losing real value. It's currency that's losing real value when interest rates go down to zero. And so that's the first thing that we're seeing. We're seeing that every time we do this, these federal bankers get more and more bold to go out and say, yeah, we're going to cut it to zero, right? Janet Yellen, who's the previous chairman of the Federal Reserve, is saying, if there was a way to go negative, I'd be voting for that. Our current president has said that I don't like the fact that our interest rates are not negative. Why is Germany able to borrow money at negative rates while we have to pay money? So this is the president. This is the chairman of the Federal Reserve. So if things are leaning in that direction, you have to look at what assets benefit from ultra low interest rates for a very long time. What happens when you're in an environment, a perverted environment like that? And how do I get to that point? How do I grab those assets, because they're going to benefit from it?
Well, I mean, one of the things that you're going to have to figure out is either you're going to have to figure out how to get a whole bunch of cash all up front, or I think the easier play is do what we've done really well and find out ways to solve other people's problems that don't know how to solve their own problem. And in doing that, we raise a whole lot of other people's money to then just follow what the wealthy do. And what do the wealthy do? Well, real estate is a really good start. The wealthy invest in real estate. And I know when I was an advisor, not in the beginning of my career, but toward the middle and the end of my career, I noticed a lot of my wealthiest clients, they were all in real estate. Now, I don't mean directly in real estate. Some of them had real estate holdings. Some of them were developers. Some of them had businesses, but there was an ancillary business in real estate. There was always some tie back to some form of real estate. I noticed this. But the thing I hated about real estate investors as a financial advisor is they never gave me any money. They had ways to make more money doing what they were doing. So the money that I got was just a little bit that they were putting into the IRAs, the SEPs. Maybe they had, you know, a solo K or a 401k to get tax deductions. They didn't care about they didn't care about that. They literally could have gave two craps about what they were giving me. It was just, I'm either going to give it to you or I'm going to give it to the government. But they already knew how to play this game. So that's all I got. And I could never understand why you got millions and millions over here, and how come I'm only getting this little, I'm not even getting table scraps. And it was always frustrating. But you know what? Then when I retired and when I got to the end, I started seeing unique patterns with what wealthy did. And when I say wealthy, I don't mean somebody that's got a million million bucks. I'm talking about somebody that's got, you know, 20, 50, 100 million, or, you know, I didn't have billion-dollar clients then, but I do now. And the way they do things, holy crap, it totally redefines everything. They go after things that we don't even look at as average public. I mean, I literally wrote an entire book with Brent Kessler about one of the biggest patterns I saw, the Mapping Out the Millionaire Mystery. This book was because I saw all these wealthy people, and I mean the mega wealthy, putting their money in these mutually owned insurance companies. I never even understood it. I couldn't make any logical sense why they would do this. I'm like, why would you do that? That's stupid. But they understood the fundamentals of banking, and they understood that they needed a method to move money. They needed a place to put money, make money on their money, not even a lot, and then take that money back out without ever losing their interest earning capabilities. And that's what the insurance companies enabled them to do. So I started seeing this, and I just started I was fascinated. Kind of like, you know, how you sometimes geek out on some of the data stuff. I geek out on the money stuff, and I was just like, there's something more to this. Then I started figuring out banks were the number one users. Apple, Genworth, and everybody else was using that, but they weren't just putting it there and leaving it. See, that's what we do. The average public has been taught to do one thing, and that is give up control of money. They've been taught to give up the control of their money, put it somewhere in someone else's control, and then wait to someday in the future when then they can take that money back. But as we already discussed, when they take it back, it's weaker dollars because they've lost all the value to inflation. They've lost the value to taxes, but that's just all that they know is to give up that control. We do the same thing with the banks. I think it's hilarious that we literally get excited about going to the bank and depositing money and getting paid zero. And we build up these bank accounts. Oh, I've got a couple hundred thousand. I've got a million sitting in the bank. I'm great. No, you know what you are? You're broke. If you're not broke today, you're going to be if that's the strategy you use because you're not moving your money. Your money's sitting there. The bank is making 400 to 1300% on your money, and you're making less than 1%. How in the world did we all get so brainwashed that that's what we do? And then what we've even – a whole nother layer. Who owns the credit cards? Who owns the banks? Who owns all the institutions that lend us money? The 5%. So yeah. What they've done is they've taught us to give them our money. Like just deposit our money over there because they taught us to believe in this thing called compound interest where our money will just sit and grow. Then they use our money and they make a ton. But then they've taught us that when we need money, not to go take our money and use it, but no. Use this credit card. Oh, use this interest rate or this loan over here. Oh, use this financing company. They own all those. So we then borrow money from these things. Let's call it credit cards. We pay 10 to 20% on credit cards, and our money's over here making one. And we still haven't connected the dots that we should take this money, find a way to move that money without losing interest on it, pay the credit cards off, and then take what we are given the credit cards and put it back in the account. You just right there, whatever you're paying your credit card, you just made 15 to 20%. But then what if you did that same cycle and you did that with real estate? What if you took the money from over here and you started buying it and using it to buy real estate and you just kept repeating that? You'd build wealth very quickly. You'd become a multimillionaire in a very short period of time, but they don't teach that. Never seen one school that teaches it, never seen one college, never even seen trade schools that teach any of this stuff. And that boggles my mind. Why is it that there's nowhere out there that this knowledge is taught on an institutional level? That's
crazy.
I feel
very deliberate. I feel that knowledge of understanding what money does and how money works. And you, by the way, that was a fantastic snapshot of how the financial system works. Like the last 5 minutes that Chris has been talking, that's how the world works. But as he said, no one has ever bothered to teach that in a college course. No one's ever bothered to teach that in a trade course. And so I tell my kids that the most important things in life are really how to be good at your marriage and how to be good at managing money. Those two things are never going to be taught to you. You have to go out and get that information. You have to do your own research and you have to go out and get better at it. And it's amazing how we're seeing a system that's exactly like when Chris said this, every single word made sense. Every single word resonated. Yeah, I do pay a lot more on my credit cards than I get in the bank. But then how many people are actually taking action about that? So the beautiful thing is that our system is designed and all of us have been brainwashed to the extent that even when you hear this, it makes an impact for a second. But you've been brainwashed so long that you have to fight really hard to come out of that and say, no, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to be on the other side. But what's interesting is once you make that change, once you make that mental switch to be on the other side, it's just amazing how everything looks like you can make money at it. It's dramatic. right? It's phenomenal. And other people are beginning to realize that, Chris. So, you know, there's, you know, people allocate, whether you're rich people or your pension funds or your insurance companies, you allocate a certain percentage of the money that you have to real estate, right? As opposed to stock markets. I think everybody understands this, that the percentage of money being allocated to real estate has been going up every single year, 2013, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, goes up every single year, right? So people are getting that real estate is a better place to invest in than whatever it is that they were investing in before. That's good. But did you know what the top two groups are that is actually aggressively increasing their allocation? Well, the first one you'd be surprised to find out is you. Public pensions have increased their visibility to real estate by 30% in just the last 5 years. 30%.
I did not know that.
And these are supposed to be the most risk-averse people of all, right? Public pensions are the number one most risk-averse thing. So you're getting into real estate whether you like it or not. As long as you have any kind of pension, if you're a teacher, if you're a government employee, they're now buying real estate. Because they realize that most pension funds will be bankrupt within the next 5 to 10 years if they don't change and move towards higher yield, because interest rates keep dropping every year and the yield from bonds keep dropping every single year. So then in the end, if that's going to happen, you're not going to be able to make the amount of money that you need to pay out as a pension fund. And so pension funds, and here's a second group, insurance companies are buying massive amounts of real estate. I mean, you go, insurance companies are buying real estate. Yes, they're buying hundreds of billions of dollars of real estate worldwide. And once again, you're like, but aren't public pensions and insurance companies supposed to be the most risk averse? Yes, they now understand that the system is rigged on the non-real estate side. So real estate, even with its risks, which, by the way, have not decreased, real estate is as risky as ever. Even with its risk, it looks better. You know, real estate may be a pig, but it's the best looking pig in the pigsty because the other pig are getting uglier. And they're getting uglier really, really fast, right? So that's what's changed. I don't think real estate has gotten any better at all. I just think that the other avenues have gotten a lot worse and a lot more manipulated. It's so much easier to manipulate digital currency. It's so much easier to manipulate stocks that are being bought and sold in real time than an apartment complex, which takes 6 to 9 months just to get ready for sale. Because it's a non-digital currency, it is harder to manipulate it. So we have a lower level of manipulation. And public pensions understand that. Insurance companies understand that. Private pensions are getting into it. I mean, just remarkable to see this change happen. And,
you know,
and, go ahead, Chris.
Oh, no, I love that because I have literally over the last, I'm going to say 6 years and even more than that, but gone deep, 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 geeked out, if you will, on insurance companies in the stock market. And what you just said is something everybody should know, but nobody does. Everybody thinks insurance companies have a lot in stocks. Insurance companies, mutually owned insurance companies, if you look at their balance sheet, it's public, go look at it. Look at Mass Mutual's balance sheet. You will see that they probably have less than 6% in stocks of their entire portfolio, hundreds of billions of dollars. And if you look at their holdings in real estate, it's substantial, absolutely substantial, only trumped by U.S. treasuries because they still have the ability to do something neither you nor me nor anyone we really know can do, and they can look 100 years out. They cannot invest for today, for next year, for 10 years from now. They can look 100 years into the future without any question, and they can invest for that. No other company can do that. They can, and they do, and they have been for hundreds of years. Therefore, what happened, you know, 30 years ago, they're still getting paid on. We're not. I mean, how would you like to still be getting interest rates from 1980s? We would salivate over that, but we can't.
Incredible.
But they do. That's how they do it. And that's so when you look at mutually owned insurance companies and you look at why pensions and you know insurance companies and everything are investing in real estate, they understand that. They absolutely understand it. Not only do they understand that, they have lots of cash. And when they have lots of cash and recessionary periods happen like 2008 or like this right here, they actually make more money. They have the ability to deploy their capital and take advantage of the opportunities that we talk about that we are going to take advantage of at thousand time levels of what we can do. I was going to say 10x or 100x, but like thousands times. You know, that's what they do. So when things get bad, they're sitting back like Warren Buffett is right now. He's just sitting there drinking his Coca-Cola, waiting for something to buy. He isn't buying anything. But when it happens, you'll see he'll start buying. The pensions will start buying. The insurance companies will start buying hundreds of billions of dollars worth of real estate and these assets that you and I are talking about right now.
Well, and I mean, it takes me back to that question that you asked at the beginning of this podcast. Remember your example about this one guy that's like, are we too late? And my answer is, it's the exact opposite. We are too early. So the key there is to understand that the reason why the market doesn't have a lot of transaction volume happening is that the people that are in the know are looking forward to what is going to happen in the next 18 months. They're going to get an opportunity that they haven't had for the last 4 or 5 years, the ability to buy distressed assets. You know, Chris and I are talking about real estate being a great asset class. That doesn't change the fact that there's going to be deals to pick up in real estate, in single family, in multifamily. There's going to be deals in hotels. Boy, oh boy, are there going to be deals in hotels. There, you know, I'm a multifamily guy, but there's a greedy side of me that says this is the greatest time in history to create a fund to buy distressed hotels, right? And asset classes like that, maybe retail might even be better. I don't know anything about retail, so I can't, you know, do that. But boy, what a magnificent time to buy these kinds of assets, right? And there were people in 2009 who understood that, you know what, multifamily is on sale. Everything's on a fire sale. And they went out and bought multifamily, not even knowing anything, and made a huge amount of money because as the market recovered, they just did nothing. They just sat on the asset, collected the rents, paid the mortgages, and then they just waited for the price to go up. And I think that's going to happen for a number of assets. Might not happen for, you know, single family and multifamily because they're pretty expensive. But I think you do get a dip in the marketplace. So, you know, if there's anybody thinking that it's too late to get in, you couldn't be more wrong. I can't imagine a better time to get into real estate than right now. You know, it's just you have to wait for the next 3 to 6 months because we don't know how quickly things will break. I just know they're guaranteed to break.
Yeah, I love that because, and it goes back to what I was saying with that guy I was talking to. You know, nobody's missing an opportunity right now. Matter of fact, the best opportunity is to sit back and just watch the show. Do nothing, just watch it and learn and try to figure out an angle as to what you want and, you know, what you want to do. So I think that's genius about the hotels because you know darn well there's going to be just massive problems in the hotel space because of all these travel restrictions. Now with a second wave of coronavirus, oh my gosh, that's like the nail that's driving the nail in the coffin in a big way. So I think that's going to be a good one. We should put together a fund for that next week. That wouldn't be hard. But the one thing that's unique about this time is, you know, I think like what you were saying is this is the best time to get into real estate. A lot of people, though, don't get into real estate because they think there's just too big of a barrier of entry. Here we are talking about hotels and multifamilies and people are like, oh, my God, there's too much. You got to remember, the people that are doing real estate, they're raising money. They're basically going out there and they're solving other people's problems. The people's problems who don't know what to do with their money. The people's problems who don't want to lose their money in the stock market. The people's problems who are making zero or negative interest rates soon, probably, on their bank accounts. And they need an alternative. They need to make something on their money to keep pace with inflation. Well, guess what? People like Neil, people like myself, we create those opportunities. We create those solutions to the problems. And you can do the same thing. Like everybody watching this can do the same thing. You can learn how money works. You can grab my book, The Private Money Guide, and learn all about how private money works. Then go out there and figure it out in a very relatively short period of time. It takes some time to master it. And you got to get good at, you know, at really kind of learning the rules and the laws behind it. But after you figure that out, you have just figured out how most real estate investors buy these big buildings. It's not their own money. Like all these real estate investors that you see that own thousands of units, they didn't start with hundreds of millions of dollars to buy these properties. They started with the ability to go out there and solve somebody's problem. And in doing that, they were able to raise money. And then that got bigger and bigger and more assets and more assets and more credibility and more credibility. And it just perpetuates. And that's how they do it. And every single one of you could do that if you wanted to learn how to do it. That's how I got started in it. I started using my own money and I learned how that hits a big, big wall very quickly. And then I had to reinvent myself and figure out, wow, well, how are they doing it? They're doing it without their own money. They're finding other people's money. And that's what they do. And that's I don't know. I mean, that's just a fantastic way.
It's not the fantastic way. It is the greatest way of all time. So understanding the use of other people's money, the ability to raise equity, is the greatest skill in the world. Not the greatest skill in real estate, not the greatest skill in stocks. It's the greatest skill in the world. I mean, you have guys like Miyoshi Son who run SoftBank, and SoftBank just lost $10 or $15 billion on WeWork. And so you're like, this guy can never raise money again. No, he just raised $15 billion again because he also invested in Alibaba. He also invested in Uber, right? So his great skill is the ability to raise money $1 billion at a time. And there's a never-ending line of people looking to give money to Miyoshi Son, and he just lost $10 billion. That's how great the ability to raise money is. It is the Uber skill, the alpha skill of the world. And today, actually, it's easier than ever. I mean, I have a little anecdote. I mean, the largest, you know, single set of investors that I have are doctors, right? So doctors, they're so busy because doctors are not, you know, they're not self-employed. They're basically selling their time. They sell it for a high price, $300 an hour, $400 an hour, but they're really selling their time. So they're employees, even if they're employees of their own company. And so they desperately need other people to spend the time to invest money. I was having a conversation with a doctor friend of mine. He's given me lots of money, and you know, he's done well. And he basically says, you know, it's interesting how you and I are so different. I had to study for, you know, 2,000 hours a year for about 7 years, 14,000 hours of study before anybody would let me practice and touch my first patients. 14,000 hours. But you're telling me that you got started in real estate by going to a weekend seminar where you got a free ticket from somebody else who couldn't attend. So he just handed you his ticket and you went there, and that's how it all started. And that you were allowed to make mistakes by buying buildings, by doing wrong things, by blowing stuff up that I was never really allowed to do because I couldn't practice for 7 straight years. As a lawyer, it takes maybe 5 years. But you could actually start practicing. So you know, and I said, yeah, you know, his name's John. And I said, yes, John, the beautiful thing about real estate is you get experience by getting experience. No one stops you from buying anything. And this fiction that is in people's minds that somehow Neil Bawa was more ready, somehow Chris, when the day he got into real estate, was more ready than they are. That is just absolute and, you know, utter bullshit. Nobody was more ready than anybody else. They just all got started. And once they got started in their mind, they're like, I'm a real estate guy, even though I don't know a bunch of stuff. That's when experience comes in. You learn by doing. You make mistakes. You're probably going to learn 10 times as much from mistakes. So the people that are saying, well, now I can't get into real estate, well, you'll never learn anything. You can't get into anything because you're not willing to make mistakes and you're not willing to learn from those mistakes, because 90% of what I remember today in real estate was based on the mistakes that I've made in the last 10 years.
Same here. Right? Same here.
And that's awesome, because a doctor cannot get that for 6 to 7 years because you can't experiment on real patients. And by the way, after that seventh year, they are experimenting on patients. The new doctors, they're doing it all the time. So this fear, this crazy irrational fear that you have of making mistakes is nonsensical, because that's exactly what you need to do to learn. And it's not related to real estate. No matter what you do, if you want to go out and sell museum paintings, you're still going to have to buy some paintings that are not worth it. So it's a crazy, nonsensical, irrational fear. Yes, timing is important, but that's what Chris and I are telling you. Timing is incredible right now. Absolutely incredible. You will see distressed assets in every single asset class in the world in the next 18 months.
And the best thing is, let's say you knew, like, we don't know when that's going to happen, but let's just say you picked 18 months down the line and you've never done a real estate deal. You've never raised a dollar. You've worked a W-2 job your entire life. And now you're just like, well, how do I get started? Well, the best news is in 18 months, you could get all the knowledge you need to be very, very effective when this thing happens. Just like I was, just like you were. Every single person watching this right now, that is your biggest opportunity. But like I said at the beginning of this podcast, to become that rebel banker, to become that person like we are, whoever you aspire to be, you have to get started. If you don't actually take that first step, nothing's going to change in your life. You might as well just bury your head in the sand right now, and you're going to get run over. But that's just all – that's the only option you have. This is either an opportunity or an obstacle. There's no two ways about it. So pick and make your choice. Are you going to bury your head, or are you going to grab a light and be the light in the darkness and lead some people through this thing? Because you know what? Everybody has the ability to be that leader. They just have to make that conscious decision to do that. And this has been fantastic. I mean, the things that we talked about, and we had no idea what we were going to talk about at the beginning of this podcast.
No structured format on this one, right?
None. But just some of the things that came out of this, literally, if you're watching this podcast right now, you absolutely need to go back and watch this again, and maybe even again, and take some golden nuggets from this and just take one or two of these things and run with it. And Neil, if they wanted to learn some of the things you do, you're all about giving, and you've got all sorts of stuff that you give away. Can you tell them a little bit about how they'd find you and find some of your material?
Absolutely. So two ways. The first way is really simple. You just Google my name. So N-E-A-L, last name Bawa, B-A-W-A. Just hit enter on Google. I happen to be, and this is my extreme luck and my extreme misfortune, the only Neil Bawa on the World Wide Web. So you'll see podcasts, you'll see webinars, interviews, you'll see live presentations at conferences. All of that stuff is on the internet because the moment I get it, I throw it up there. The second way, if you want to learn in a more structured fashion but don't want to pay any money, you know, to get started until you're convinced that it's the right thing to do, go to a website called multifamilyu.com. That's multifamily followed by you.com. And you'll notice that there's more than 40 deep dive webinars. And you'll immediately notice something different. You'll notice that these webinars get into the business end very, very quickly because we only invite presenters that are willing to do that, that are willing to dive very deep into the content matter and give us something that's not just one or two nuggets, but an entire presentation filled with nuggets. So we do these. We had two last week, and we had about 2,700 people that signed up for them. And about 75% of those people were repeat folks because they love the webinar series. We do them as a series. Right now, we're doing a series about the impact of coronavirus on real estate. Town Hall 6 had 1,300 people signed up. So you can imagine, we've done this five times already, and they're coming back for number 6 because they're learning new things as they go. They're imbibing that content either in real time or by watching recordings on their own, kind of like podcasts, very similar to Chris's podcast. And I think that's a phenomenal way to learn, to get comfortable. But I do urge you that you don't do it to the nth degree. I have some people who basically say, I'm learning real estate by listening to podcasts. And my question is, when you listen to a podcast or a webinar for an hour, at the end, how many action items did you write down? And how many minutes did you spend on those? Not hours, minutes. And if the answer is zero, then you actually didn't learn anything.
That's unique that you just said that. So you don't know this, but while you were talking, I was taking notes, not only taking notes, circling them and telling myself what I need to do. Every podcast I do, now these are podcasts I'm doing. I take notes, do a solo podcast on the perfect investment, that like over and over. So folks, listen, I'm doing this while putting a podcast on, while being the host of a podcast. If you say, oh, I can't do that, I don't have time, then how am I doing this? You That's right. always can make time. There is never, ever a time where you can't make time. This is how I do it. If I'm driving in my car, I have a scratch pad on my passenger seat always, because if something comes to my mind, I might pull over and I write notes down. Because if it comes to your mind and you don't do something, what is the chance of remembering? You'll get to where you're going. You're like, oh, what was that? Darn it. Oh, it'll come back to me. No, it won't. No, it won't. In most cases, it will not. So you have to take action immediately. So folks, we're going to put this up in the show notes. We're going to put multifamilyu.com. Go on there and just Google his name. It's the only one on the World Wide Web. And boy, oh boy, I wish Chris Noggle was the only Chris Noggle on the World Wide Web. It'd make life so much easier. But yours is. So Neil, this is fantastic. Thank you so much for your time and for coming on. And I hope we keep doing things like this because people need to hear this, they need to learn this, and they need to apply this. And that will change so many people's lives. And if there's one thing, I know this is me and I'm sure you're the same. My one major goal in my life is to change a lot of people's lives. And if I can succeed on that, Money, you know, things doesn't matter. That is success. And that is what I'm after. So, Neil, thank you for being part of that.
Thanks so much for having me on the show, Chris.
You're welcome. Thank you, everybody, for joining us for another episode of the Real Estate Money School. We'll see you on the next episode.
Ready to master money in real estate? Then it's time to become a Rebel Banker. Learn more about our events and other resources at chrisnoggle.com. If you're enjoying the show, share it with friends, family, and fellow investors, and remember to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. See you next time right here on Real Estate Money School.